Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 52.
This week on the podcast, we find our first common ground with Rand Paul, proving that even insane people know that drones are scary.
It's part 27 million of our continuing series, The Economy is Fake.
And Hugo Chavez is dead, offering a potential boon to the Russian economy as their permanent embalming services are put to use yet again.
The GOP's internal war has its next frontier. It's governors versus senators versus Obamacare versus people.
And Lindsey Graham's terrifying apocalyptic vision for America.
Iowan Television is now permanently able to subsist on campaign ad buys from super PACs.
All this and more. Plus, don't forget to follow us on Twitter. This is Brain Trust Live.
Well, we have two pieces of breaking news this week. One is that my father is here joining us for the podcast.
Hooray.
Hello.
Yay! The other is that there's a really rowdy beer pong game going on right outside.
Right outside of the window, basically.
Right.
I walked into Lila's apartment, and it was sort of upsetting because there were people, like, sprawled out on the lawn, and it was just it really devolved into something pretty horrible.
It had taken a turn since the last time I went past it, but it was certainly disturbing even then.
Right,
so I'm disturbed by adults playing beer pong in all circumstances.
It's upsetting.
Yeah.
If you're not in college,
don't do it.
You shouldn't be doing it.
There's other games that you can play after college where you can use, you know, game supplies more than just like cups and a table.
Mm-hmm.
Like once you're out of college, you can buy a soccer ball for yourself
and you can move beyond beer.
And you can move beyond beer.
Yeah, we're drinking wine.
Yeah.
Right this very second.
It's true. There's no game that goes along with drinking wine.
Well, there are a
podcasting.
Lot.
Podcasting. The game of podcasting. The game of podcasting had a real boon on Wednesday.
I mean, we could have just only talked about Wednesday, really.
We're not
going to do that.
No, but we're about to spend a long time talking about Wednesday.
In fact, you could spend 13 hours.
I could spend 13 hours talking about Wednesday, but only if I had some phone books to read out of, because Wednesday was...
It was the filibuster.
The filibuster day.
Our first real-life filibuster since
the
filibuster rules
Right, changed. The new rules changed. Confusing one, because it was carried out by Rand Paul.
Yes.
Who is a wacko and is the kind of person you think might actually do a filibuster, but he was sort of right.
He was. I mean, he was and he wasn't.
Right, sure.
In the sense that it was sort of annoying that he was holding up Brennan's nomination with this filibuster, because it sort of wasn't necessarily the time or place for it, potentially.
Right.
But, I mean, you know, spending 13 hours talking about the drone program, I don't have a problem with.
Exactly.
Which was sort of why we were... under whatever circumstance he was going to choose to talk for 13 hours about the drone program, I was okay with. And whether it was
Correct.
Holding up the nomination of the head of the CIA, I didn't... That was
Who
fine.
I have I questions didn't... about because of his involvement
sure.
with the drone program.
Well,
so...
and so did Democrats.
Yeah.
I mean, Ron Wyden,
Ron Wyden,
a Democrat from Oregon, who has questions about the drone program, joined the filibuster for
yeah,
a while.
Yeah, and he was going... He had always intended to vote for Brennan. He had already voted him out of committee. And he was just sort of like, this is a good chance to talk about drones, so let's do it. They had, on Twitter, they named it the Filiblizzard, because they were supposed to have a big blizzard that day in D.C., and it did not happen, as is the case every time that they claimed they're going to have a blizzard in D.C. They also don't have any, like, way of dealing with snow there. It's like the
really?
South, sort of. They're like, the worst in a snowstorm.
They assume that the hot air emanating from the Capitol will melt the snow.
Exactly.
Sort of like the way the steam pipes underneath the streets of New York take
melt
care
snow.
Of snow.
Huh. No, but they just like, it's sort of the South and it's very hot there and they don't get a lot of snow and they panic a little
bit. For some reason in my brain, I'm picturing DC getting a lot of snow all the time.
It's not happening. They're getting some rain. They're getting some humid, hot weather. It's sort of a swamp. It's a swamp. It's actually a swamp. In many ways. In any case, the filibuster was, it went on for 13 hours and it was joined by a few other people who obviously Paul couldn't give the floor to somebody else because then he would end the filibuster. So instead, a bunch of senators who agreed with him got up and asked really long-winded questions slash went on tangents that were about anecdotes, about nonsense. Ted Cruz, who's from Texas, went on, like, a long tangent about the Alamo.
He's always on a long tangent about nothing, though.
Well,
so, this, I mean...
He told a very long...
It's just a
well, it
day
was,
in the
it
life
was,
of Ted Cruz.
It right was here. Almost the 177th anniversary of the Alamo.
Sure.
So he just sort of went... He was talking about it because Ron Paul... I mean, Rand Paul was originally from Texas. And so they had a long conversation about that.
Sure.
And then Mike Lee got up. He was talking about some nonsense. Then Ron Wyden got up. Then
the best one,
the best thing that happened. And, the New York Times described this as, a Shakespearean drama because after Cruz and Lee and Wyden got up, Marco Rubio took the stand.
And he gave us this little gem right here.
I know you've been here a while. Just let me give you some free advice. Keep some water nearby. It comes in handy. Trust me.
Of course, if he knew anything about filibustering, he'd realize the last thing you want to do is drink a lot of water.
Yeah.
Exactly. Which I think, isn't that actually how the filibuster ended? I think Rand Paul said that there are certain complications with the filibuster, and, like, I'm now going to have to go deal with one of them, and then sort of laughed and walked off, I think.
Someone asked him if he would have been willing to use a catheter, and he was like, no, I've put one of those in before, and it was uncomfortable, or what? Something like that. He, like, acted like he had some bad catheter experiences before.
He may have. Which,
it's a bit of a mystery,
I need
but
to go back to
too
the
much
days,
information.
The days of Strom Thurmond, who didn't need a catheter. He could hold out for a long time.
In any case, the filibuster was started because Eric Holder had said that he thought that it was within the administration's rights to target people on American soil with drone attacks if, you know, in extraordinary circumstances. And that got everyone all up in arms. But so Eric Holder did make a response to this filibuster that was not, I don't think, what Rand Paul was expecting.
It wasn't really what he was expecting. It was also like the simple, I remember we were talking about this earlier in the week, and I sent you the link to it, and I was like, that was easy.
Yeah, exactly. Because
the response is fairly short, and we will play it and Rand Paul's response to it as he hears it for the first time for you right now.
And it says, Dear Senator Paul, it has come to my attention that you have now asked an additional question. Does the president have the authority to use a weaponized drone to kill an American not engaged in combat on American soil? The answer to that question is no. Sincerely, Eric Holder.
Hooray.
Done.
So easy.
God.
One sentence from Eric Holder just solved the whole thing. Could have saved everybody the 13 hours the day before, but
they're not getting anything else done particularly. Plus, I enjoy filibuster in the way that you enjoy a sporting match.
Oh, I was watching it.
I'm sure.
When I should have been doing other things.
Yeah.
And I was finding common ground with my Republican editor that day. We were both really sort of on the Rand Paul bandwagon that afternoon.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just, you know, anyway, it was just a good filibuster can bring
people
the whole
together.
Country together.
I mean, I thought it was a genius issue to filibuster, actually, because it was probably the only issue that was such a, like, murky, like, issue in terms of whose side everyone was on, that it was the first time that Rand Paul has ever appealed to the left. It probably will be the last time.
It might be.
But it sort of made him look more like his father.
Well, and it was also just perfect because it was really and this was, sorry, I mean, I kind of mentioned this earlier, but it was really the only time that it was perfect because it was a good way to get this being talked about. Like, whether he should have been doing it, like he was doing to get this vote blocked on Brennan, but it was just sort of like, there was no other way that we were going to be talking about this in the way that his filibuster got everybody talking about
it.
And it's important to talk about.
I'm willing to have any legislation stopped for 13 hours for any dumb reason if the person's actually willing to show up and talk for all 13 hours.
Sure.
I don't mind if people want to read out of the phone book for 13 hours or whatever. Like, that is totally fair to me, but this is the first time that we've seen one of those threats of vague filibuster actually come to fruition. Yeah. I didn't expect it to be even as relevant as it was. I thought he would go on some weird tangent that had nothing to do with anything. So I feel thrilled that someone actually delivered on that threat. It's a great day in Washington.
Not shocked that it was him. He's just crazy enough.
Yeah, he's just crazy enough.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, there's the Air Force, sort of around this same time, announced that they were going to stop releasing, like, their actual drone usage because they had been sharing the number of drone strikes that they were using on a monthly basis, but they said that they decided to stop doing that because the data apparently disproportionately placed emphasis on airstrikes as opposed to all the other uses of drones, like spying.
Yes.
So we're not going to find out
we'll
how many
know.
Drone strikes we're committing because otherwise, people might think drones are evil.
God forbid.
God forbid.
Yeah.
They wouldn't want you to think they're using them to deliver aid to
no.
no.
Pakistan.
That would be embarrassing.
Yes.
Meanwhile, also on Wednesday.
Also on Wednesday, literally at the same time that Rand Paul was still filibustering, because he filibustered late into the night.
Let me tell you what, who had time on Wednesday to be doing this. Would be Republican senators.
Right. There was no work for them to be done.
Exactly.
Doing it. Unless they were going to come and ask a long-winded question so Rand could go to the bathroom.
Right, and one person that was not going to do that was John McCain, because he loves drone strikes.
No, he's probably had a lot of bad catheter experiences, is my guess.
Speaking of, yeah.
John McCain, probably.
But John McCain and Tom Coburn went on some sort of, like, dinner slash, like, social call with Obama. Because,
well, I think there were, like, 10 of them,
He's sort of, I think, slowly working his way through the Senate Republicans, and he's going to do it in the House, too. He's taken everyone to dinner on his own dime.
Yeah.
Republicans, I feel like, can really get behind that whole...
Oh, sure.
They love a free meal, I bet. They there's any group of people, I would guess,
I think they had. I think they had Seabass, if I remember correctly. They were talking about it on MSNBC, what they were talking about.
But John McCain and Tom Coburn gave thumbs up to reporters.
Yes.
Which is
John McCain also
a sign.
He loves a good thumbs up.
Oh, well, he loves a good reporter.
He does the two-handed thumbs up a lot, John McCain.
He loves a good moment in which he can make some sort of vague gesture and be in the spotlight for it.
Yeah. Of course, conservative commentators are on
immediately curious.
Like, could, you know, these... Nobody should even be seen with Obama, let alone dining with the man.
Yeah, God forbid we try to come up with a plan that ends the sequester and gets a plan together that works for the country.
Yeah.
That would be a shame. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, I mean, I think Coburn is among them. There's a bunch of senators that are in favor of raising revenue in you know, along with tax cuts. They are in favor of tax cuts as well. But they are in favor of raising revenue as long as there's cuts to programs like Medicare, which Obama has offered. He's not shy about offering Medicare cuts.
Yeah.
Social Security cuts. He's willing to do whatever.
Sure. Well, and the list was interesting, too, because a few of them are not seeking re-election, like Saxby Chambliss, and he's one of the people who has supported, like, higher revenues in the past.
Right.
But then there were also, like, Ron Johnson, who's, like, the freshman... From Wisconsin, who's a Tea Partier. I mean, it was really sort of, like, all over
besides
the,
freshmen
the
and retirees would... Be That's willing true. To do this.
Yeah. The new Three Amigos were there.
Oh, yeah.
Because Lindsey Graham was there, and John McCain and Kelly Ayotte.
Yeah.
Who was
the buddies.
The third amigo. No.
The replacement it. Lieberman.
Mm-hmm.
So sad that he couldn't.
No.
He's no longer out there operating with his awkward.
There's anybody nobody wants to have dinner with. It's Joe Lieberman.
Talk
about the most boring dinner party ever. God.
Be a nightmare.
Not to mention that it has to be kosher.
Right, yeah. No bacon.
Oh, God.
It's probably the end of everything.
Ruins everything.
Meanwhile, this week also on Wednesday.
In the morning.
People were feeling pretty rebellious on Wednesday.
Yep.
A bunch of Democrats walked out of a committee meeting over a jobs bill because they were pissed that the Republicans were not really negotiating in good faith.
Well, the Republicans...
They weren't.
The Republicans didn't want a jobs bill.
No, exactly.
I mean, that's why they walked out.
Exactly.
I mean, they were supposed to be talking about a jobs bill.
And instead, they were talking about...
If there's one thing Republicans don't want,
it's a jobs bill. They were there to talk about how they could block a jobs bill that was called the Workforce Investment Act. And basically, Republicans... It was supposed to provide funding for job training, and instead the Republicans kept wanting to consolidate different jobs programs into one program and basically sort of eradicate them. What that would have done is basically made 30 jobs programs into one program that didn't have the funding of 30 programs.
Sure, the way they wanted to deal with the jobs program is to get rid of it.
Exactly. And
that's what they were
That
out
didn't
for.
Sit well with the committee Republicans, who I love when Democrats walk out, too. I love when anyone walks out.
Yeah.
There was a while in the New York State legislature where people were just walking out all over the place.
Well, the
they
New
were
York
holding
State
separate sessions. I love walkouts. They're so exciting. They're like second to filibusters. It's like my favorite thing that people... I love sometimes, you know, like various Democratic caucuses walk out of things.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, this is a total aside, but we're not technically talking about it today, but did you see that Christine Quinn is running for mayor? She announced.
Yeah. There she is. Just running for mayor, as she's been doing for years.
I just wanted to get a reaction.
Yeah. I feel like at some point we're going to have to do a mayoral election rundown because the LA mayor's race is coming up too.
Right, and we're having a runoff.
Right, and nobody knows who they're supposed to vote for.
No.
I was telling everyone
well,
to
I
vote.
I don't, because I don't get to vote on it.
I was telling everyone to vote for Garcetti, and then my dad was like, no, I don't like Garcetti. So, I don't know.
Well, I didn't like his father.
Right, you didn't like his father.
I don't know anything about him.
I don't know anything about either of them.
I was just about to say, what were you basing your pro-Garcetti stance on?
On the fact that his father once released a photo book on Cuba.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
I met him once. Well,
people were asking me what to do in the West Hollywood City Council elections, and there were like 14 people running for like two seats, and I was like, you know what? Just pick whichever two you want, but just vote for term limits.
Right.
Because we had term limits. That was one of the things that people could vote for, and I was just sort of like, some of those people have been in the city council since like we became incorporated 25 years ago.
Career part-time politicians.
I don't care who you vote for. You could vote for anybody. Just vote for term limits. And it passed.
Oh, it did.
It did.
So you could run.
I can now.
Perfect. I've been trying to run Brent for something. It never quite gets off the ground. But I think we could pull off city council. That seems doable.
It seems like, yeah.
We know where to find everyone in West Hollywood.
Yeah, the Abbey.
The Abbey, yeah. meanwhile, we had some promising economic news this week.
I guess, although it's probably going to be the last bit of promising economic
that
news
we ever
have, right?
Yeah, well, no, it won't be the last piece of pretend promising economic news. We're going to be probably talking about how great everything is doing according to fake statistics for a few weeks. It is going to be the last time that we believe what we're saying, because this was the week that everyone was sort of, you know, we had a Dow Jones record high.
Yeah.
We had the jobless rate fall. And then we had a lot of articles that were like a backlash to that, talking about why that was meaningless. How everyone is still screwed.
So technically, if we're to just look at only the numbers.
Right, things are going great.
We added 236,000 jobs last month. The unemployment rate is 7.7%, which is the lowest it's been in a long time.
Right. All those jobs were private sector because the government actually contracted.
They lost jobs.
Which is not surprising because they're trying to figure out what to do about the sequester business. Right. And everyone got furloughed. A bunch of people on Facebook that I know got furloughed this week, which is exciting, I guess, if you're a person who doesn't like things. Meanwhile, there's still a lot of long-term unemployment. That rate has not really changed much. But the Dow Jones hit a record high, so we're all supposed to celebrate. Except anyone who reads Huffington Post, because Huffington Post ran this as its lead story, and the headline was, "It's a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing."
Which is
and then
one of the better
the other headline, when you actually clicked
there.
On the story, was Dow Jones hits record high thanks to strong performances from smoke mirror sectors. Which is my favorite HuffPo headline
that's
I've
good.
Ever read.
Yeah, it's good.
And basically, this story talks about how this record high is sort of meaningless.
Yeah.
The first all-time high that we hit was on Tuesday, and that we hit 14,253. Then on Friday, we closed at 14,397.
Right. But the previous was right before we crashed.
In October of 2007, we hit the last record high. That was 14,164.
Yeah.
And we had just surpassed 1,400. I mean, 14,000 basically at that point. But things did not continue to go as smashingly.
Right. And if we were to, the number that we reached on Friday is the highest that we've reached.
Right.
But if you're actually adjusting for inflation, then it would have to get much higher than it actually did for it to have beat what it previously was when it was in 2007.
In inflation
so
adjusted
even,
dollars.
It's not even really the
no,
the
exactly.
highest that
we
it's
would
ever
need
reached,
to hit 15,731 in inflation adjusted dollars, which makes me wonder if even though the stock market has been going up steadily over time, if we've always actually been shrinking. Like, if the Dow number has always actually been lower, you know, over the years because it hasn't kept up with inflation.
I don't know, because I've been on the record as
not understanding the stock market.
Exactly.
I say that as someone who doesn't know what the Dow number refers to.
No.
But I'm just going with it. It sounds to me like a fake number. As I've said many times before, the economy is fake anyway, so it's not any more or less fake than anything else we know about the economy. It's all just sort of arbitrary numbers. Meanwhile, though, because this exciting thing happened, all of the usual, you know, experts got out and started talking about how, you know, this is a sign that everything is going smashingly, and obviously James Glassman, who wrote Dow 36,000, was out on the trail, even though he's been totally discredited.
Right, because he was talking about how the Dow was going to get to 36,000, like, basically right before it crashed in 2007. But now that it's back high again, he's, like, back out there. And
back out there hawking his crackpot view. HuffPo called him Nobel Laureate for dumbness in extremis.
These are, like, articles that you feel like you would find on the Onion or something.
These, like, Funny Farm articles are going on. This whole article was written by somebody who must have just given up. They were like, this is no longer news.
Good, I like
this. This is just madness.
Yeah.
But in any case, some facts that we did learn in this article that are more disturbing than happy.
Yes.
Include the fact that there was a professor at Berkeley who was looking into how actual income, you know, went up between 2009 and 2011, or, you know, grew or didn't grow. And he ended up finding out that even though overall income grew like 1.7% over that 2-year period,
it was all going to the top.
It wasn't just all going to the top. More than all of it was going to the top. 121% of that gain went to the top. That means that the bottom 99% actually saw their income shrink, even as the economy was supposedly doing well and incomes were supposedly rising. They were rising for a very small group of people, but that horrified me.
Well, it's horrifying.
I mean, it's horrifying, but like that was the fact in that made me sort of lose my shit, because that means that even when the economy is fake doing well, it's not doing well. At any time that the economy is supposedly doing well,
pretty much we're never to believe that the economy is,
there's no way to find out if the economy is doing well, because all the facts and figures that we use to talk about it are fake. Meanwhile, and Robert Reich also weighed in on this in terms of why these Dow gains and these other stock market, you know, figures are not really that good for jobs numbers, because corporations basically, you know, this is about corporations making money. The stock market increases when corporations are doing well.
Sure.
Corporations have been investing in technology instead of workers. This means that workers have no bargaining power. It means that jobs are being lost to machines and things like that.
Well, that's because they get tax credits for doing that.
And they get tax credits for doing it. So profits are going up, but they're going up because they're saving on labor costs.
I was going to say,
And because of that, the joblessness problem gets even bigger, because even people with jobs end up getting screwed in that situation. It's like, you commonly get told now that if you have a job, you're lucky, so you should just shut up. I mean, remember when Occupy was going on and everyone was going on about how terrible it was that all of them were unemployed losers and how, you know, you should just be happy if you can get any job. So they should just be going and getting a job.
They should just go shower and then get a job.
As if there were just jobs around that they should be getting. And also as if anyone should be taking any job. I mean, as I said, I was talking to Jill about this because she felt guilty. She was on unemployment, you know, between jobs. And she had turned down a job that was like way below her level of, you know, what she does. And I was like, if you got offered a job as a stripper, that wouldn't mean that you had to take it. Like, there are jobs that are appropriate and inappropriate. And when we're talking about joblessness, we don't mean that everyone should take any job. And that, you know, when...
Trust me, not everyone should be a stripper.
No, exactly.
It's just the facts of life.
The facts of life. But I mean, when workers have no bargaining power, and when even supposed good jobs are bad jobs, we're in sort of a state where no one's really winning. Right. One person is winning out of every 100 people, basically. Yeah. And that's a person that none of us like. It's a person that none of us would want to go have dinner with.
Yeah.
You couldn't afford it.
I couldn't afford dinner with that guy. But in any case, apparently James Glassman is now the executive director of the George W. Bush Institute.
Well, sure.
Which leads me to believe that you can really say anything and continue to be respected as some sort of think tank expert in Republican circles.
I know. I loved the former Reagan and George H.W. Bush administration, the economist had the best reaction to Glassman out there. Saying that the Dow could reach 36,000 again. He said, "Nitwit Jim Glassman is again predicting that the Dow will reach 36,000. Time to sell everything."
So, enough said.
Anyway, yes.
Meanwhile, we were led to believe that the Dow would be crashing already.
God. Everybody thought that.
Because Obama would somehow be causing that by being not too friendly to corporations. I'm not sure what they thought was going to happen.
No, but everybody claims that he's so anti-corporation, even though the corporate profits have like skyrocketed and the Dow is where it is.
It's and sort of like, the stock market always does better under Democrats.
But it, historically has.
Yeah.
Yes.
So this shouldn't be any surprise, but this was apparent. I mean, I guess people are sort of looking back now, maybe just because that Romney interview came out last week and everyone remembers that he's alive and everyone sort of been talking about or was talking about during the election season how, and this was a refrain that you heard from Republicans who were claiming that the world was going to end if Obama got elected, and it was going to be because the stock market was going to crash. Just even, like it did the first time he got elected,
I was gonna say,
caused by George Bush.
I was going to say, even though he'd been president for 4 years, as if like his re-election, was going to be the end of the world.
That was going to be the same for guns.
Wow, that's true.
It was, gun profits were skyrocketing and there were no regulations, but it was definitely going to end the second time.
Yeah.
He was going to do an about face. Anyway, big foreign policy news, big enough that we are covering it.
Yes.
That's because we cover...
And we blogged about it.
We blogged about it. We've been all over this story.
Yeah.
Hugo Chavez, dead.
Died.
Died at 58.
Yeah.
He had cancer for a couple years. At one point, he went to Cuba to get his tumor removed, but then I guess it came back.
Well, they had an exchange with Cuba where Cuba was sending a bunch of doctors to Venezuela in exchange for Venezuela sending them oil. I mean, he was actually going to Cuba.
Right.
I mean, there are a ton of Cuban doctors
everywhere.
In Venezuela. Well, everywhere. But specifically in Venezuela right now because they were doing an exchange.
One thing, that's like one of the only exports that Cuba has at this point. Cuba has a free, university system. They have more doctors than they could ever know what to do with. They don't even have medical supplies. So the healthcare is free. But they send a lot of doctors to Africa, to other developing nations.
Yeah.
And Venezuela, when they get into these exchanges with other countries, with the few allies that they have left, they always send doctors as part of it. Because why not? They need oil. They have doctors.
Exactly.
Everything. Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, what Cuba offers is people. It doesn't have the natural resources, or like sugar is not that valuable. Like all of the things that they sell.
I'm surprised
there,
that you just said that.
Sugar is very valuable to me. But sugar on the commodities market,
sure,
not that valuable. Fair rum, enough. Cigars, like
no oil.
Those are all niche markets.
No.
But none of them are oil. But trained doctors,
that's a good one.
That's a thing.
Yeah,
In any case. The exciting part, because this is sad, obviously, and we posted a thing because we were sick of hearing our left-wing friends about how horrible Chavez was.
We were shocked at all of the people that, like, Lyle and I are both friends with on Facebook, who are progressives, and also with Think Progress. It was shocking that Think Progress,
Progress was projecting, because Think Progress posted an article that told us that we shouldn't commemorate Hugo Chavez because he had supposedly, reportedly, been an anti-Semite, which is like the most random claim to make about the leader of Venezuela that I can possibly imagine. And I'm sure that it had to do with the fact that they were allies with, Iran. And Ahmadinejad is an anti-Semite.
Sure.
For sure. But it was one of those issues that was like, are we really letting our Middle East politics affect our own hemisphere in this way? Like, this is a crazy reason to not care about Chavez.
Yeah.
Because it's such a specific, random thing. And obviously, every foreign leader does something evil. We don't have any allies that are just saints.
Venezuela does not have... They're not the only one who are sort of like in that market.
No.
At all.
P.S.
We're in it,
as
a matter of fact.
I was going to say, P.S., every really, truly evil dictator that has existed in Latin America has gone there with our blessing and our money. Like, they had actual, disappearances and, state paramilitary nonsense going on in Brazil and Argentina and Chile for years that we were supporting.
Yeah.
We supported Pinochet. Everybody, let's calm down.
Right.
But anyway, the left is crazy, I guess. And we explain in our post this week why.
Read it.
Why you should maybe feel like it's important to commemorate what Chavez built in Venezuela, because it's rare.
And you'll be able to go do that by looking at his preserved body.
This is so exciting. So, communist leaders have a great love of getting preserved. Basically, permanently embalmed, I guess, is what it would be.
Do they decide this, before they die? Did he get cancer and then be like,
I'm sure.
Preserve me.
Yeah, of course he did.
Okay.
Because he wanted to be considered among the pantheon of great... This is something that every great communist leader has done.
Sure.
Lenin was the first one. And that's how the whole thing got rolling. And Lenin comes up with all the good ideas in communism, and then Stalin bastardizes all of them. But Lenin is like, if you're talking about good communist ideas and fun communist ideas, that's where Lenin comes in. Then Stalin did it, but his body later got removed. But Ho Chi Minh did it, Mao Zedong did it, everyone in North Korea is doing it. They want to be, I mean, North Korea is sort of more aspirational, I think, than anything else. They just really want to be considered among the great communist leaders.
Evita. She's buried now, but I mean, she got sent around.
Yeah, she was, well, it was because she died, you know, during an unfriendly regime. And so they sort of like secretly shuttled her body all over Argentina for a while to hide her. And then later she, you know, emerged and got.
Yeah.
I've gone, but I...
But what were you saying, what you were saying earlier about how everybody has to go to Russia to get this done?
Oh, yeah. Russia is like the experts. Me and my father have both been to see Ho Chi Minh.
Sure.
Because I spent a semester of college in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And you have to go see Ho Chi Minh, and it's really weird. And you get put in this, like, you get put in a double line with strangers. And so you end up, like, escorting a small Vietnamese child through with you a lot of the time. And they just sort of like, every adult just sort of like grabs the hand of a child and everyone just goes through and it's weird. But any case, they tell you there that in order to get this done, they had to send him to Russia because Russia is where you go to embalm a former communist leader. And every few years, they have to send him back to Russia for re-embalming. A makeover, yeah.
A tune-up and makeover. A tune-up,
exactly. So Russia is
apparently... He looked pretty good,
actually. He looked pretty good, yeah, I know.
He
looked like a wax figurine, but he looked like, you know, he looked like Ho Chi Minh. I felt...
Of course, the only time we've actually ever seen Ho Chi Minh has
it's
been...
Right. He looked like images of Ho Chi Minh I've seen in the past.
How long can this go on for?
I mean, I guess it can go on indefinitely. We'll never know. The HuffPo had an article about the challenges that you would face in... But HuffPo was writing this after interviewing a bunch of American scientists who are not, as we've just pointed out, on the forefront of permanently embalming former communist leaders. You have to go to Russia for that kind of... They have the technology in Russia. We've seen it in action.
And it's constantly being upgraded.
And it's constantly being upgraded because this is an ongoing
problem. There's people who work on this.
There's professionals there who do this for a living. Yeah.
Graduate program.
There's probably former leader embalmment. But I guarantee that everyone else who's been permanently embalmed has gone to Russia.
Probably.
These people all went to Russia. I bet Mao came from Russia. I'm sure that all those North Koreans were in Russia.
Yeah.
You know, spending $1 million to ensure that they would be permanently embalmed.
Yeah.
And it's always exciting to go visit those things because they always set up like a really extravagant, you know, compound for you to visit with a museum. And communists love having like really symbolic, confusing museums where there's no actual like artifacts in the museum. It's just like symbolic displays.
Okay.
And so they can always accompany one of these things with a huge symbolic display museum.
Got it.
Anytime you go to a communist country, you're forced to go to like 75 different symbolic displays of various things.
There's nothing there.
Well, there's nothing there, but every resident of the country can tell you in a very sort of like specific way what all of those things
mean.
Yeah.
They're ideological museums.
Exactly. They basically are. I mean, I think that Vietnam has an ideological museum, like a museum of propaganda or something like that. That's like,
I like that.
Yeah. They're open about it. It's a propaganda museum. Propaganda is not a bad word in Vietnam. In any case,
more foreign policy news.
Apparently, Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction, Stuart Bowen.
That's a mouthful.
I better bold that title because I'm not going
to
remember it.
Well, it's a whole sentence, so we knew we'd never find it if it wasn't
exactly.
In bold.
But he made his final report to Congress and concluded that since the invasion that we recently ended, the U.S. has spent way too much money in Iraq for no results.
Nothing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're basically just throwing money at Iraq to have them just redestroy everything all the time.
And the Iraqis acknowledge this as well. They have sort of, you know, members of their parliament are basically sort of like, you know,
everything's been misspent.
A lot of money came in, but like nothing really got done.
Came in literally in shrink wrap pallets of fresh $100 bills.
Yes.
And they would bring in pallet loads of cash and disperse it.
That's
no record.
Didn't get it
done. Not a solution.
It's not a solution at all.
I wish someone would do that here.
Yeah.
A cash like pallet right distribution to maybe fix the economy by just handing out cash to me.
Well, we've already heard some theories that are not much crazier.
That's true.
Much less crazy than that. Right
Fair
there.
Enough.
Remember the trillion-dollar coin?
Yeah. No, exactly.
Yeah.
They would lose it.
We heard an interview with the guy. Yeah, I would definitely do laundry with it. It would be worth it too. Yeah. We heard an interview with a guy who used to work at Fort Knox who talked about what it would take to protect that coin, and it basically would cost like as much money to protect it as like it would be worth anyway. Like it just doesn't. And it's not legal. Like, you're not going to be able to break a trillion-dollar coin, so it's useless.
Who would have the change?
No one has change for that. No. Exactly. Only the Treasury has change for that. Yeah. And that's only because they print it.
And as soon as somebody stole it, then we could just sort of declare the next day that it's not worth $1 trillion anymore. I mean,
That was an unconstitutional coin, and now it's over.
So go try to buy dinner with it.
Exactly. Meanwhile.
We're getting some... The Republicans are not on the same page with each other on Obamacare.
No.
Because we had some Obamacare love this week, and then some Obamacare hate.
I'm going to tell you what this is about. Listen to me, friends. the governors love it.
Right.
Because it's money for their states.
Yeah, exactly.
And people in the Senate hate it because it makes them look like they're spending money. And they haven't spoken to the governors, evidently. They don't realize that everyone loves money that feels like it's just for them.
And also, their constituents think that they hate it because it's called Obamacare. But they actually love it. But they actually love it.
Because it's effective and it makes their lives easier.
Yes. And everybody loves what they get with this money.
Exactly.
They just don't know it.
They don't want to call it Obamacare.
Right.
Meanwhile, a group of House Republicans wrote a letter to Obama, oddly asking him to extend the pre-existing condition insurance plan, which has been, like, the least effective part of Obamacare because basically, and this was necessary as a sort of, you know, stopgap measure, I think, but as part of Obamacare, they created an insurance plan for people with pre-existing conditions who can't find regular insurance. Now, no one can afford this program because it's, like, $1 million a month to participate in it.
Which, it's not the same as your insurance, like, you being able to get insurance with a pre-existing.
It's not like
it's a specific insurance program
that is only for sick people.
For sick people.
Worst idea in the long run.
Right, because
ever.
Obviously that can't work.
Exactly. I mean, that's like only having a car insurance company for people who've totaled their cars.
Right. Frequently.
Like exactly. Like there's no reason insurance doesn't work that way because it's pooled risk, and if everyone's at high risk, then everyone pays for everyone doing shit.
But the Republicans in the House, mysteriously loved
this
plan. They
love this program.
And this program was about to end.
Yeah.
And they wrote Obama a fairly, like, scathing letter about how that they wanted they wanted funds reallocated back
because
to this
will leave
position.
Thousands of Americans with pre-existing conditions without access
apparently,
to healthcare.
Apparently, all of a sudden, Republicans care about people with pre-existing conditions.
I know. Advocating basically killing them in the past.
Right. We saw that at a Republican debate.
Right.
Where...
No, but I'm... This is what they like about this program. It sounds really good, and people like it.
Right.
No one can afford to participate in it, so it's essentially free.
Right.
There's no money going into it.
But it costs so much. It's a $5 billion program, so you would think that they wouldn't care whether it went to crap, because they're all about cutting everything.
But this also prevents... If we have a program like this, then suddenly we don't need a mandate, and we don't need all these other things that they don't want.
Right.
Because we're taking care of people with pre-existing conditions.
Even
we're doing it in a way that's like huge profits for insurance companies because only sick people means you can charge up the freaking wazoo.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like windfall profits plus money that makes them look good plus it blocks the need for a program that we do actually need.
Yeah.
It's everything that they could want slash hate in one program.
Yeah. So also love for Obamacare.
Jan Brewer,
who has sort of shown it already.
Right.
She was sort of surprisingly one of the governors who decided that she wanted to take Medicare expansion.
I'm seeing a connection. We're talking only about states with tons of old people.
Old people, exactly.
Rick Scott, Jan Brewer, why did they need to take this program? Because the whole state is over the age of 55.
Right. Yeah, exactly. No, it's true.
And they need, and it's either poor or 55. Like, there's no one else in the state but old people and poor people.
Right. But she basically had to, she is having to convince all of the Republican lawmakers in the state. And they're pissed. And she had basically like a press conference where she had public health officials there with her. And some of the Republicans showed up in black to protest her decision to take the Medicare money. Like,
they're protesting. What? They're protesting people getting health care.
I know.
In a death suit. They were dressed as the Grim Reaper to remind everyone that was their intention.
Yes. But even Jan Brewer, she said, the human cost of this tragedy can't be calculated. She said, there is no plan B. I mean, she really is sort of like out there really campaigning for this
money. They're after Rick Scott, too. I mean, they're after all of these Republican governors who have realized that this is a great deal and they should obviously take it, are getting lambasted by a bunch of crazy ideological nutbags.
Yeah. But, I mean, there are 50,000 people in Arizona who will not have health care if they, you know, don't end up taking this money.
Yeah.
So.
Poor people. Poor people, old people.
Yeah.
When you only have those two kinds of people in your state, you need free Medicare money to come through. Because there's nowhere else for
people
to get healthcare.
People need to pull themselves up by their boots.
Right.
They do.
Take care of themselves. They need to have a sense of responsibility.
That's right. Yeah. Those 55 and older retirees.
Exactly.
They need to, the 10 years before they qualify for Medicare is, you know.
Oh, God. Anyway. Oh, so Paul Ryan, this is sort of, I think, my favorite audio clip that we're going to play for you from the week. But he was on Fox News Sunday this morning, and he's basically going to be unveiling his new budget later in the week, which is going to be probably as crazy as all of the other ones that may pass the House that will never make it out of the Senate.
But we know why it's never going to make it out of the Senate / ever go anywhere.
Right. Because
of something that Chris Wallace lays down.
Yes. And
we're gonna play it for you right now.
Are you saying that as part of your budget you would repeal, you assume the repeal of Obamacare? Yes. Well, that's not going to happen.
Well, he makes a fair point.
Yeah. And as this is not a video podcast, you're missing the hilarious, dumbfounded look on Chris Wallace's face, who was just sort of, like, shocked. Because he initially, obviously, hadn't understood that this was where some of the...
Right, well,
it's too crazy to understand. Because basically what they were talking about was where he was going to be, like, cutting in the budget. And they were talking about, like, Medicare savings, I think. And he didn't realize that savings was going to become... coming from him cutting Obamacare. So he sort of like had to back up just a little bit and sort of clarify. And then he was literally so dumbfounded that he just like, and that we didn't elongate that pause right there.
No.
I mean, that was literally, you could see the wheels turning in his head as to like, wait a minute, this is nuts.
Well, you can't decide to write a budget for conditions that you have invented.
If you're
Paul Ryan, his whole budget is about conditions that he's invented.
All
but you
of
can,
the budgets he's ever...
It's like, should we write a budget where we assume there's no military? And then be like, well, we're just hoping that the military gets defunded before we pass this budget.
Sure.
That'll happen. Like, you can't just...
There's a lot of military savings.
Right, exactly.
Based on not having one.
We just assume that we've already not had one.
Yeah, sure.
Hopefully this isn't another one of those terms where they try to repeal Obamacare like a million times.
Like for the 37th time or something that, or however many
I think they're up to 34, 33, something like that.
Yeah.
If they're in the 30s now. It's they've done enough. At this point,
they have.
They've given it the old college try. Yeah. There's no reason that anyone can claim that they haven't really tried their hardest.
Yeah. Well, the last time that they haven't tried in a while, and the last time that they tried was when Michelle Bachmann did it, and we talked about the story where she couldn't even get a co-sponsor to the bill.
Yeah.
So it's just sort of like why you would put that in your budget when even the crazy Republicans in the House don't want to vote to repeal Obamacare.
Why are they, like, the reason they backed off on that issue is because it was one of the things that lost them the election. People like the Affordable Care Act. The more that those things kicked in, the more people like them. It was not a winning strategy.
Well, the Supreme Court has already upheld it, obviously.
Right.
So it's just sort of like for them to decide to defund it is just sort of
at this point it's over.
Crazy anyway.
Just deal with it.
Yeah,
just get over yourselves.
Yeah.
In any case, but Marco Rubio was also there talking about how he's going to vote to shut down the government if they don't defund Obamacare. Like, shut up.
Well, he may vote.
Right.
Defund the government.
He will be. Not in the majority.
He should do that. I would.
Yeah, I would like him to do that.
I think that's a good plan for him.
As a senator from Florida,
Senator from Florida who thinks he's going
to
run for president in 2016 doesn't want the government to be running. That's a hard platform to be running.
Why would you want to run for president if you don't want the government to run?
It's the
age-old question for why any Republican has ever run for president.
Or any office.
Or any office.
Because all of them are living off the dole. The government dole. At this point, like, you know, I mean, at any point,
true.
Not at this
Marco
point.
Marco Rubio
like
is living quite well off the government.
Yeah, as we learned from his impending house sale in the $600,000 range, moving to a nice part of D.C.
Well, he's a middle class guy.
Aspiring middle class.
Right. Yeah. He's from a working class neighborhood.
Yeah, right. We learned that.
We learned that. Yeah. And then there's the Voting Rights Act.
Yes, we talked about this last week, about how all of... Basically, all
Suddenly
of the signs.
Suddenly, we're trying to again.
Yeah, all
get
of the
rid
signs
of
from the oral arguments that just happened would make one think that they're going to overturn Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. But...
as it turns out, we've done this before.
We've done this before, which nobody has really been talking about. But in 2009, they heard this in the Supreme Court, too. And everybody was just convinced that they were going to overturn this. And it was actually upheld 8-1. And they were so convinced that they had written a statement for Eric Holder, who was going to, like, slam, like, the fact that it had been overturned. And they had not written another statement for him, like, lauding the it being upheld. So, like,
they were scrambling to write a statement
for him the morning that they...
Why is the court hearing this case again?
Well, that, I don't know.
And is it a bad sign that they're hearing it again for the second time in 2 years? Because would they need to hear it again if they had just upheld it in 2009 weren't going to change anything?
Yeah, it's a little weird. I don't know.
Because it's the same court. It's not like there's someone new on the court for us to be... Right. That there's going to be a change all of a sudden. Yeah.
But
I mean, there might be, because everyone's crazy.
Apparently, in 2009, the Obama administration had sort of, as they thought this was going to get overturned, had pretty much prepared what they were going to do, you know, if it did.
So there's a plan.
So there's basically already a plan. They don't even have to sort of, like, go back and revisit it. Because
this is also an insane time to do this, because if there was ever a year where it's fresh in people's minds that we really do need Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act to be upheld... it would be this year, 1 year after an election in which every state that is covered under Section 5 tried to pass a law that would limit the right of people to vote, and every one of those laws got overturned because the court had to oversee them.
Well, basically, supposedly what their plan was in 2009 was that if this got overturned, that they were going to basically then do just sort of like a broader...
massive overhaul
of voting rights, basically. So, and we actually heard him sort of mention... voting rights in his inauguration speech this year. So I don't know if he was thinking about this case when he said that, but I mean, they know what they're going to do if this gets overturned.
This is fresh in everyone's mind enough that I think that there will be broad calls for some sort of plan if this doesn't get upheld.
Yeah, I think so too.
Because all of these states are not trustworthy.
Yeah.
They're not the only ones.
And they're not the only ones. No, there were plenty of other states. Yeah. There are plenty of... Pennsylvania is not one of the states that has to have their laws... you know, their laws approved by the Justice Department, but they certainly tried to pass laws limiting votes.
That was one of the craziest ones. Yeah.
So there's plenty of reason to think that every state should have to do that. You know.
Yeah. But another law that is going to be in front of the Supreme Court here pretty soon on March 27th is DOMA.
Yeah.
Signed by President Bill Clinton, who wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post this week about how he thinks DOMA should be overturned,
and he signed it.
And he signed
it. It's his law.
So I mean,
that's a sign that
that's great.
Things are happening. Every law that he passed like this has basically been overturned with his support. I mean, don't ask, don't tell was a Clinton policy.
Yeah.
That suddenly we all hated. I wish I understood the genesis of that law, of that policy a little bit better, just as I wish I understood how DOMA got passed under a Clinton administration.
I think in terms of don't ask, don't tell, it was bad, and I'm glad that it's been overturned. But it was in response to sort of, I think, them wanting to help, because I think they were going to outlaw gays in the military.
It was in response to the fact that huge numbers of gays were being outed, and as soon as they were being outed in the military, they were run out with dishonorable discharges, and they were decimated.
Yeah.
Military.
Yeah.
Right.
So I'll sort of give him a pass on that.
No, I mean,
it wasn't perfect, but that was sort of like the best that he could do.
I sort of understand how that policy came to be. I don't understand how all of these have since come up under the Obama administration with Bill Clinton's support as bad policies, how we're suddenly all in favor of overturning these policies that Bill Clinton was the one that passed. Like, this is just sort of a mind-boggling turn of events.
He was dealing with an extremely hostile environment, and attempting to basically do the best he could under the circumstances.
The military
at the time was losing all of its translators and intelligence analysts.
Right. I mean, it was an intelligence analyst or a translator or something that sparked that whole debate to begin with, because they had discharged like a guy who really did have irreplaceable skills.
Right.
And it was just because he was gay. And it was like, he can't speak Arabic if he's gay, like gay people can't speak Arabic. Yeah. So I sort of, but, and in any case, I think that it's interesting because as Obama is now the first president who has endorsed the idea of gay marriage,
yes,
we are now taking what is sort of like the Democratic platform and changing all of these laws that were sort of acceptable just like 10 years ago, yes, or, you know, 12 years ago, to even Democrats.
Yeah.
And even Bill Clinton has sort of evolved on this issue, which is...
Which is good. Nice. I mean, this is really sort of all he can do at this point. Yeah. I mean, and say that he thinks he should get over it.
I'm glad he's come out for it.
Me too.
You know, I think he probably... It would have been foolish of him not to.
Probably.
At this point, he's the sort of, like, grandfather of the Democratic Party. If he can't keep up with these sorts of, like, minor changes in social politics, like, he...
Yeah.
He might as well retire from his his honorary position as being a guy we all refer to.
The general public.
Yeah.
Well, that's
true. Not out ahead of the curve.
No, they were behind the curve.
Well behind the curve.
Doma was behind the curve.
Yeah.
Doma was passed at a time that was not the trajectory that we were all.
But not in the military culture.
No, but Doma's just in the general culture.
Right.
The military took a while to kind of like keep up. They always keep up. Take a while to keep up with.
The general culture is way out ahead of this.
Yeah.
And they're playing desperate catch up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's a good sign, I guess, for the case. Yeah. I feel like that case can't hold water.
I don't think so. I mean, there's a lot of Republicans signed that brief with the court. I mean, and as we said last week, the Obama administration itself did.
No one's going to want to be associated with defending the Defense of Marriage Act.
I just don't think so either. I mean...
That's a foolish...
Santorum.
Well, right.
Well, sure.
He'll be there.
He'll be alone, but he will be still out there in his pink sweater vest.
Well, it's going to be the same thing that we always get. It's going to be the four crazies
But I don't think any reasonable...
Stevens, who's going to do whatever he decides to do that morning.
Right.
I mean, that's, you know, it's...
Yeah.
It's not how the court is.
It's an interesting case because it really has more to do with the social politics of the era than it does with the political politics of the era. And for a court full of old, you know, stuffy people to be hearing this case right now is sort of when someone like Bill Clinton has done an about face entirely on a bunch of these issues, because he was not in favor of gay marriage before this. He maybe have been personally in favor of gay marriage. I don't know what his personal feelings about that were, but him and Hillary were maybe civil union people. They weren't out there hawking this issue. So it's sort of interesting that it's being left to a bunch of stodgy people, like stodgy old people who are way behind the times to hear. In any case, Tom Harkin, who is always up to this, and George Miller of California have decided that they're going to introduce legislation to raise the minimum wage. So we're finally getting some traction on that Obama State of the Union talking point.
Yes, and Nancy Pelosi is saying that she wants the Republicans to take it up.
They should.
And they should. And as we know, Nancy Pelosi is the Speaker of the House.
Exactly.
I mean,
she's the Speaker of the non-lunatic part of the House.
Right. She's the Speaker.
The whole non-lunatic part of the House.
She's the Speaker of the...
of Party One.
The amount of people that are needed to help John Boehner actually get anything passed.
Exactly.
Which makes her the Speaker of the House.
Exactly. So they want to... The Harkin bill wants to raise the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour. And then tie it to inflation so that it continues to go up, which is what they should do, but I'm sure they won't. But I don't know why this is so controversial among Republicans. It would be, I know it would cost, you know, it would cost the kind of exploitive businesses that they love
money
in personnel, but it's sort of like, it like expands our tax base. It provides jobs to non-teenagers, which they have... You know, the people that actually vote for Republicans are being hard hit by unemployment and all these other issues. Like, this is not like a tax on anyone. It's not revenue raising. It's none of those things. It's just like a regulation that would allow adults to make a living.
Yeah.
But it would cut corporate profits for exploitative businesses.
That's really they only care
and
about.
And then what would happen to the stock market?
The stock market would just...
Yeah.
I'm starting to think that we should crash the stock market because maybe that would mean that the bottom 99% would get some shit done. Get some of that money that was being lost by corporations.
All going to the top 1%.
Yeah, that was being lost by corporations.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't there... There's a finite amount of cash in circulation at any given moment.
Oh, no.
I mean, they can print more.
Right, sure. Yeah,
they can print as much as they want. But I'm saying, like, assuming... that money is a resource that gets redistributed among people at some rate.
There's only a certain amount right now.
Yeah, there's only a certain amount at this moment.
Right.
Until the next printing or whatever. There's only a certain amount of cash out there. It seems like if corporate profits fall, that money goes somewhere. Maybe it will go to
the people who are earning the minimum wage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This
seems like we should maybe encourage the stock market to fall.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the right thing to do.
Just get rid of it.
Yeah, I would just be in favor of that. If someone was like, can you come up with an alternative plan for the economy and make it a real thing? I would be like, why don't we just get rid of everything that you think is real but is actually fake? We could start from scratch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you want to be a partial owner of a business, approach them and become a partial owner.
Exactly.
Go sit at board meetings. Yeah.
Republicans are good at that, actually, getting rid of things.
Yeah.
That they think are real, but are actually fake because
they're thorough.
Because they're trying to get rid of Acorn, even though it hasn't existed since 2010.
Yeah,
they've already defunded it. The reason it doesn't exist anymore is because the government defunded it.
The government's not allowed to put money into Acorn, should it exist.
No.
There's a new short-term budget bill that was introduced by House Republicans on Monday, and it includes a special provision banning federal funding to Acorn. Acorn, first of all, there's already a ban on federal funding to Acorn. Second of all, as we've just said, Acorn doesn't exist.
You couldn't give money to Acorn because there's no Acorn to give money
to. That's banning funding to Lehman Brothers. It's not a thing anymore.
Yeah.
They would never do that.
They would never pass that. Yeah, if you want to give money to a defunct bank, that's a very different situation.
Yes.
The stock market, guys. We need to protect the stock market.
If Lyle and I got rid of the stock market, the Republicans would still want to give money to it.
Exactly. meanwhile, getting down to the real nitty-gritty of what's causing the deficit.
Yeah. So as part of the sequester cuts, actually, they are not giving White House tours anymore.
Yeah.
So they just announced this week. It's part of their, across-the-board sequester cuts. And Louis Gohmert, who we have talked about on many occasions on this podcast, who's a crazy person, he's from Texas, introduced an amendment to a continuing resolution on the federal budget that would not allow any money to be spent on President Obama going golfing, on any of his future golf
outings. Here is a question. Would it allow him to take up tennis, for example?
Maybe,
Is it just golf, or are there other sports also implicated in this?
I don't know.
What if he wanted to take a trip to, a bookstore? Is it all sort of fun that they're banning?
I sort of have mixed feelings on this because while Louis Gohmert is crazy, all presidents are golfing more than I'm comfortable with.
So true.
A, because golf is dumb.
It's boring.
And B, because I just really am sort of the mind that they probably do have better things that they could be doing. I am too busy to golf. Okay? I try and get people to watch The Real Housewives of Atlanta. That is my job.
Right.
Okay? And I do not have time to golf. So something about the amount of golfing that all presidents do does make me uncomfortable.
If you do a thing for a living, you don't have time to golf. But
if you're running the free world, then you definitely don't have time to golf.
If you are a CEO, you don't really do a thing for a living. That have time to golf.
That's the problem with the president golfing, because who is he golfing with?
Exactly. Well, I was going to say.
This is too true. Yeah.
There's no one that you could ever find to golf with that would be an appropriate person to be hanging out with as president.
Mm-hmm.
Even his friendship with Tiger Woods strikes me as suspect. I don't need the president to be friends with Tiger Woods.
No.
I need the president to be friends with Elizabeth Warren, and I know that he's not meeting her on the golf course.
No.
So, in any case.
Oh, God.
I was...
My home state.
I was at the forefront of misunderstanding things about things.
Oh, God. Basically, and this has gotten out of committee now. But they are trying to outlaw no-fault divorce.
Which
They're
is
trying to make it
the
illegal.
Only kind of divorce anyone has anymore.
Well, of course.
Because now you can just get a divorce all the time, which is great. It's great for the lawyering industry.
Yeah,
it's
totally.
Great for the people industry.
But the reasoning is a little suspect.
Yeah, this is suspect.
Because apparently the representative, whose name is Representative Gassman, which, okay, anyway, he says that the issue is near and dear to his heart because his daughter and son-in-law recently divorced, putting his granddaughter at risk.
Now, you might be thinking, what kind of risk? Financial risk? Safety risks?
She's going to become
a
prostitute.
Yeah, she's going to become promiscuous.
He said there's a 16-year-old girl in this whole mix. Now, guess what? What are the possibilities of her being more promiscuous?
Yeah.
I would say, whoa.
I would say, if we're talking about
her
being
met her.
More promiscuous, I would say there's a 0% chance she's going to be more promiscuous than she currently is. She might be quite promiscuous already. Right. And this may not solve that problem.
Maybe he knows that she's promiscuous.
And he's thinking of ways to
She's trying to save the family name.
Yeah, exactly.
He's probably from a small town in Iowa.
He's trying to save face. He knows there'll be the gossip mill out there.
Yeah.
Talking while they plant flowers on Main Street. His
granddaughter.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, anyway. Oh, God. Okay. Oh, Lindsey Graham has some theories about why we all need automatic weapons.
Yeah.
And there's... It's a crackpot theory, as you may guess.
This is a crackpot. As me and Brent obviously don't believe in anyone having any weapons, so this takes quite a departure from our initial position.
Yeah.
But it also is a departure from any reasonable person's position because it draws. It basically is advocating using automatic weapons to kill people.
Yes,
it's for protection from and to kill people. Like it's talking about people hunting. We have the audio of what. What his plan is.
We'll just let Lindsey Graham
speak for himself.
Yeah.
Can you imagine a circumstance where an AR-15 would be a better defense tool than, say, a double-barrel shotgun?
You mean in defense of the
home? Let me give you an example that you have a lawless environment where you have a natural disaster or some catastrophic event, and those things unfortunately do happen, and law and order breaks down because the police can't travel, there's no communication. And there are armed gangs roaming around neighborhoods.
Thaddeus McCotter, we have your next screenplay.
Yeah, exactly. And then what happens if the zombies show up?
Then the aliens come down.
Then, what next?
I don't know. An AR-15 won't work.
You know.
Make sure you have a wooden stake.
Garlic.
Garlic.
A wooden cross, maybe.
Yes. The proper antidote, or you know, the antivenom, or something.
Right. Some sort of. It depends on what mythology you're reading, but there's certainly.
What's going to be at the next hearing? We have no idea.
Lindsey Graham, watching too many action movies.
Yeah.
Has apparently a soft spot in his heart for Cloverfield.
Well, it's. I mean, you and I talked about this when we were talking about guns the first time. You and I both think that the reason that these people want these sort of guns is to shoot people with anyway.
Yeah, no,
whether there's been a hurricane
You don't
or not.
Need an AR-15 to shoot a bunny rabbit.
No. This is not shocking to me from him. It's crazy from him. But, I mean, it's the thought of him being able to shoot up an armed gang just, like, gets him friggin' so... he can't even see straight. He gets so excited about the thought. But just the thought.
Just... The idea that he could become a part of that type of action movie sequence is too exciting for words.
His vision of the future of America is scary.
I know.
I wonder what roaming
gangs.
What did he mean by other catastrophic events?
I know.
Maybe when they end Social Security, there'll be roaming gangs.
old people.
Terrorizing the country. In
you will need AR-15s to fight them off.
Yeah. So
that'd be scary.
Yeah, and during the same week that Lindsey Graham was sort of hawking this insane vision of the future, I'm sure that he was probably trying to, make it so we wouldn't pass any gun laws. But there's a new study out this week from the Boston Children's Hospital, and guess what it says? The states with the highest number, just literally the most number of gun laws on the books, have far less gun violence than states that have fewer
laws on the
books. They have
42% less gun violence.
That's a lot of people.
And we're just talking about the number of laws. Even if it's a state where they have 500 laws that all say the word peanuts and guns are mean. Or, you know, like, we're talking about just the number
just
of gun
volume.
Laws. Just volume-wise.
Yeah.
Like, if you pass a gun law, you will have fewer incidences of gun violence.
Yeah.
Period.
Doesn't even have to be meaningful.
Doesn't have to be a meaningful law. It just has to be a gun law.
Right. Oh, boy.
Meanwhile, Liz Warren.
She's like the queen of the internet,
she's,
by the way. I mean,
she's winning at being a senator.
Every time she speaks, it's just like...
It becomes a viral sensation.
The best thing that you hear all week.
Yeah, no, it's true. That's because she's having to remind bankers of a few common sense things that they seem to be unable to sort of like...
Yeah.
think about. There was a hearing this week about money laundering.
Yes,
because a lot of big banks are laundering money for like drug cartels. Drugs,
right, HSBC. They were fined a lot of money for this. But I mean, Elizabeth Warren's sort of was wondering why they're not in jail because they're violating all sorts of federal laws.
Yeah.
They're money laundering. They were money laundering to the tune of like almost $1 billion. And her point is like, why aren't these people in jail?
Right. These people just sort of like have their business pay a fine. They like go to work and make a decision to do this thing that is illegal.
Yeah.
And then they just go and sleep in their beds.
Yeah.
And she
basically schooled these people at this committee for like the tune of like 10 minutes, but the real gem came at the end, and we'll play it for you now.
If you're caught with an ounce of cocaine, the chances are good you're going to go to jail. If it happens repeatedly, you may go to jail for the rest of your life. But evidently, if you launder nearly $1 billion for drug cartels and violate our international sanctions, your company pays a fine, and you go home and sleep in your own bed at night. Every single individual associated with this. And I think that's fundamentally wrong.
And so do we.
Right.
She's right.
She's correct. That's the kind of simple, common sense thing that she's been saying to bankers.
Yeah.
In every one of these hearings that she's been a part of, where they've all tried to sort of like act like they have no responsibility to do anything.
And I wish Tea Partiers would be paying more attention to Elizabeth Warren right now. Because, yeah. I mean, this like the drones.
Right.
Spoken of by Rand Paul.
Is an issue we could all get behind.
I think.
Yeah. Well, at some point, me and Brent are going to do a blog post about why we should be able to get along with the Tea Party. Like, why our concerns are actually quite similar to theirs.
Yeah.
So, look out for that. Not this week, but sometime.
We think that the banks are stealing from everyone, and so Tea Partiers think that
the government is stealing from everyone.
Right, and welfare
and
recipients.
Exactly.
So, they're wrong,
but we're all concerned about the theft.
Exactly.
So at least we have a starting point.
Yes.
You know, that's. Meanwhile, this is bonkers town.
Right. We've got some audio for this.
We have some more audio.
It's the longest audio clip. It's a couple minutes long. But Bill O'Reilly sort of lost his mind on air this week on Alan Colmes, who's a Democrat, and they were basically talking about the debt.
Right.
And O'Reilly was like, "Obama has not actually proposed cutting anything," to which Alan Colmes informed him that, well, actually, yes, he has. And here it is now.
Give me one damn program he said he cut.
He has cut
one.
Entitlements. He has cut
entitlements. One program.
What do you want to yell at?
Because you're lying.
I'm not lying.
You are lying.
Don't call me a liar. Don't you sit there and call me a liar.
No, you're lying.
I'm not lying.
Hey, here's the proof.
You don't like the president. You don't like what he's doing.
Give me.
But don't sit there and call me a liar.
I am. Give me one program.
We can have a disagreement without you calling me a liar. That's not necessary.
No, you're lying.
That's not necessary.
You are lying.
I'm not lying. We have a disagreement. There's a difference between having a disagreement and calling me a liar.
Yeah.
That's a personal attack.
This is why I'm calling you a liar. Give me one program he said he cut.
He would cut Medicare and Medicaid.
That's
he would actually
not
cut
a specific
he offered cuts
program.
In those. You asked me a program. Those are programs.
Bill O'Reilly, unfamiliar with the definition of the word
not
program.
Not Medicare, a program.
Right.
Wait. What?
You asked for a specific program, yes.
God.
And
but he was literally like, he sounded like a deranged person.
Yeah, he's angrier than I could have ever gotten about this. And I would have been quite angry talking
to him. Or sounded
anyway.
Or you could have got that angry
right.
about it.
But I couldn't have gotten that angry sounding in a conversation with him about this. And that was the most infuriating conversation ever because it's like a conversation where someone is shouting at you to do something that you're doing and you can't figure out how more to show them.
No, exactly.
Like, you can't figure out, once you've named a program, you can't name the program again and make him stop shouting.
All you can do is say Medicare like
exactly.
100 times in the span of 2 minutes.
There's no solution at that point.
No.
So, in any case, apparently the White House is now advocating for phone unlocking.
And this is great because I could have had an iPhone a long time ago when I was really sticking by T-Mobile, which I have stopped doing.
Well, because you
point,
needed an iPhone and they weren't giving
an
you
iPhone.
An iPhone.
Gosh. But this was actually in response to one of those White House petitions that people can do on the White House website, and like 114,000 people signed it, which is enough that the White House has to respond, and they basically were like, yeah, we should do this. You should be able to unlock your phones. You should be able to unlock your tablets. There's no reason why if you purchase something that you shouldn't be able to then take that to whatever service you want to use it for.
Well, and it's a redundant protection because you sign up for a contract to get them at the reduced price through your actual phone company. So, right. So to them, pay... for them to lock them on top of that, you're already locked into a contract with
them. Yeah, exactly.
You don't need them to then also lock your phone so that you can't resell it to somebody else if you want to, or do whatever you damn well please with your cell phone.
Yeah.
In any case.
But anyway, that was exciting. I'm hoping that happens. I would go back to T-Mobile.
You were a great lover of T-Mobile.
I was
on T-Mobile for years and I hated them.
I struggled with that.
I know.
You know.
I know.
I resisted for a long time. Had Samsung Galaxies for years and years.
And you also had the BlackBerry Pearl.
Oh, I had two BlackBerry Pearls.
Yeah, those things really take a beating.
I loved those, actually.
I know you did. Those. We just recently had Jill was up to posting a lot of photos of us on Facebook recently.
She's been in an iPhoto K-hole this
week. But she posted a photo of Brent at one of my birthday parties where we all went ice skating, and he's like texting on his BlackBerry Pearl while ice skating.
Yeah.
Not safe. I've seen Brent ice skating. He shouldn't be on the phone.
I also had black hair in that picture,
too. Yeah, you did.
It was during my hair dyeing
And you were wearing your favorite walking sweater, which has since shrunk in.
Right. My housekeeper shrunk it. She put it in the wash. It's
cool. The poor walking sweater. meanwhile, Iowa is already having election ads.
This is crazy.
This is banana.
Basically, the Patriot Super PAC took an ad buyout against Bob McDonnell.
Well, the other thing is, it's anti someone ad.
Right, it wasn't just sort of like a vague sort of like, yeah, meet our candidate, or even sort of like a, you know, in 2016, we need to stand up for this, and this. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, it was very pointedly against Bob McDonnell, who is going to probably run for president. Right. He's term limited, so he's not going to be able to run for governor anymore. Well, he's not running now.
Well, right. Anyway, the ad warns that Bob McDonnell pushed the, quote, largest tax increase in Virginia history. So, really getting to the meat of what people care about in 2012 or 2013 for a race that's happening in 2016.
Yeah. A race that's happening in 2014.
Right. Speaking of races that no one has confirmed anything about, but everyone already knows who's going to run in.
Right. Ashley Judd is running for Senate in Kentucky against Mitch McConnell, even though she's saying that she's not.
Right. She's been playing it coy with Huffington Post, but she's also got together, like, a bunch of consultants. So everyone knows she's doing it.
She basically, like, has a team of people in the state who are working on the paperwork, and, I mean, she's sort of been dealing with high-level donors, and she's been talking to, you know, she's doing it. She's just not saying that she's doing it.
Right, and she's acting sort of indignant when asked, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
But, in any case, that is going to be an exciting race.
That's exciting.
We're into that race.
Yeah.
And we...
It'll be interesting because she's, like, a real liberal sort of...
I was going to say...
I mean, one that I can certainly
she's not too
get
far
on board with, but, I mean,
left.
Like, Kentucky...
Yeah.
But I can't
imagine. But a celebrity!
She's a celebrity. And you wouldn't think that anybody would be able to win a primary against her.
No, exactly.
You know, so I mean, she's...
And I mean, in a state like Kentucky, maybe they don't have a great chance of having a Democrat get elected to Senate.
I think they've had Democrat governors before. They have Democrat Senate.
But I mean, it's why not have someone from the far left run?
Well, exactly. I mean, if there's even an off chance of anybody winning, you might as well
McConnell
have it be Ashley Judd.
Is not particularly popular at the moment.
Of course, he's not popular because the right sees him as sort of making too many deals.
He's not popular because he has a position of responsibility. So he's actually had to do his job a little bit. He's not doing it well, but he's had to at least keep up appearances.
Yeah.
But in any case.
So that'll be exciting.
That's the news
of
the week. That's all of it.
I didn't realize that was the last story.
And yet here we are, taken by surprise. Stories are done. Now we're off to eat. We're going to eat. We're going to eat dinner. Enjoy your week.
Yes.
The Pope election's coming up.
Oh, yeah.
So that's exciting. Yes. My dad had some good ideas about...
Yeah, I truly believe that all Catholics should vote for Pope, and there should be real election campaigns with posters and commercials.
Yeah.
That would be fabulous.
It'd be awesome. So much fun. And then we could all feel involved.
Yeah.
As it is now, I don't feel connected to the Catholic cause because they're all being secret and they're cloistered in the Vatican,
but
and I don't know what they're up to.
There were negative ads.
Right.
Cardinal so-and-so.
Like
Cardinal so-and-so. Well, it might
great.
Help them keep up with, you know, there would be ads being like, Cardinal so-and-so is a horrendous, you know.
Well, I bet that probably happens in that room.
Possibly.
I would think.
he doesn't that believe happens. That the Eucharist is blah, blah, blah.
But I would like to be seeing that.
Yeah, I would love to see the types of arguments that Catholics would get into about who was better qualified.
That's going to be our blog this week.
Yeah, we're blogging about it. Yes. So keep an eye out and tell your friends. We had a good turnout last week on our, because it was our one-year anniversary.
Yeah, we harassed all of our friends.
People were listening.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah, it was awesome.
So, you know, keep
it up.
More
people should.
More people should do that. Tell your friends. Okay, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.